Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. During the municipal elections this past fall, many candidates were elected on a platform that included affordable housing. It has emerged as a critical issue in Northumberland as housing prices soar, rents skyrocket, and fewer people have enough money to live in a decent place. On November 21st, the county released its 2018 report on the state of homelessness in Northumberland, following a survey that was done in April. Its contents drive home the nature of getting people proper shelter in the county. To help us unpack and better understand what is in that report, I have asked David Sheffield, Community Director for the Greenwood Coalition and outspoken advocate for affordable housing, to be with me today in the studio. Welcome, David.
Hey, thanks, Robert.
So when you read the report on the state of homelessness for 2018, what were the things that stuck out in your mind?
Well, I think, first of all, the concern that the numbers are growing, and the actual report doesn't show a huge increase. Probably we're feeling a larger increase than is reported there, and that some of that is just the difficulty of actually reporting on this stuff. So that's a bit of a challenge. I think that looking at the conversations that they had, the surveyors had with folks that are experiencing homelessness right now, show some of the root causes of that. And when you look at the number of or the percentage of those people who have significant challenges that require some level of supportive housing, some further intervention beyond just a roof over their head, that's part of what is our particular challenge in Northumberland. Housing is a challenge across the province and many parts of the country, but here in Northumberland, our folks experiencing homelessness often have what they refer to as a higher acuity or greater needs, more challenges that those individuals are facing.
So let's unpack all this, because there's a lot in there in that report to understand. Now, I noticed that a previous report had been done in 2016, mm-hmm. and in that time there were 302 people that completed the report. This time there was only 62. What happened?
So that's a difference in reporting. I think that probably somebody from the county could answer that better, but the first count like that was done in 2016, and there's a requirement from the provincial and I think the federal government wants some of this, a requirement to do this every 2 years and update this. Some of what accounts for that is kind of where you're going to contact people, and there's it's a complicated process. Do you walk up to someone on the street and say, "You look like you might be homeless. Would you fill out a survey?" Or that sort of thing. So this comes through various agencies, and I think it's important to look at both 2016 and 2018 as snapshots at a particular time and place of what's happening in homelessness in the community. It isn't necessarily they didn't talk to everyone who's homeless, and that's a revolving piece. So maybe a bit more enthusiasm in the collecting process, maybe more agencies involved in 2016 than in 2018. But your question about, are we increasing or decreasing in the numbers of people who are homeless is a bit it's a bit challenging when you're doing essentially a 4-day snapshot trying to contact as many people during that time. The other thing I will say too that is different, and probably I should have said this up front, the 2016 survey also surveyed people at risk of homelessness, and in the current report some of those numbers are listed there as well, because we felt that was important initially, and it didn't seem to be justifiable the second time around. But understanding that homelessness is often quite cyclical in Northumberland County, people who are at risk of homelessness may well be homeless 3 months from now or 6 months from now, and being proactive would be useful. But if you are surveying those people with no possibility of offering anything to alleviate that, it's a bit unethical to do that. And so if you're talking to somebody about their risk of losing their home and you have nothing that's going to prevent them becoming homeless to offer, then best not to survey them.
So there seems to me to be a difference between chronic homelessness and episodic homelessness. In other words, people who are homeless for varying reasons, and in one case it's very hard for them to get a home, and in another it's they fade in and out. They will find a place, it'll last so long, and then they can't find a place and they're homeless again. Can you help us understand maybe the landscape a bit in terms of how much chronic homelessness there is and how much episodic homelessness that might be, where there are these people that are at risk?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good question. Yeah, because it's important to understand that people who are who become homeless often are able to resolve their homelessness themselves without the intervention of other agencies, that kind of thing. And so tracking it with something like a survey will give you a little bit of a picture of what's happening there. But there are a percentage, and the report sort of breaks down those percentages of people who likely are going to rehouse themselves or need very little intervention to be able to rehouse themselves. Those are episodic things, and people with the resilience and resources. Maybe they have family, maybe they have community support that will help them to do that. On the other end of the spectrum are folks that, as you say, are chronically homeless, that have been homeless for longer periods of time. And the longer someone is homeless, the more difficult it is, or the more support they require to come back into that. And the 2018 report versus the 2016 report shows an increase, actually, in that number of people in that category, chronic homelessness, requiring more intervention. And so the overall numbers surveyed aren't very different, but that's sort of that high acuity phrase that I mentioned earlier, folks that may have mental health concerns, for example, or other health concerns that require them to have more support, intervention. It requires more than just providing an apartment for them to move into. Mm-hmm. They need somebody to see them regularly, that kind of thing. So in terms of the challenge to house those people, yeah, that's a lot bigger.
It's interesting because as you were talking, chronic homelessness went from 48% of those who responded to 63%. Mm-hmm. So quite a substantial increase of like 15%. And then a drop in episodic homelessness, that transient one, went from 16% down to 6%. So, you know, in terms of hard numbers, it's really stark. Now, what sort of a role do catastrophes play? For example, I know the Port Hope fire was a really a test of our ability to handle that sort of homelessness that comes out of something that's unexpected and catastrophic. What significance did that play in the statistics we've seen, or in the affordable housing environment when that took place?
Yeah, I think it's quite significant and had a significant negative impact on the overall picture. I think if you compare Northumberland, I mean the urban areas of Northumberland, Northumberland don't amount to a huge population, and so the scale of things here can be affected quite easily, whereas a fire of an apartment building in Toronto, isn't going to have as wide an impact. What happens here, we had a 0.3% vacancy rate, so almost nothing available in the rental market here, and then all of a sudden 50 people are displaced one afternoon into that market from rentals that are now gone. And so over a few months, there was a big response to sort of help support those people through that and support them in finding apartments, that kind of thing. And my understanding is that most people have, from the fire, have fared fairly well, and most were housed, and some left the area. But the reality of that, if you put 50 people into a market where there's almost nothing there, it means somebody else is bumped out. And so I think if you sort of go down the ladder of housing, what happens is people are bumped out the bottom. And so this is the would reflect things like chronic homelessness and that sort of thing. The timing is different, so that the report doesn't reflect what has happened since then. But we've certainly seen an increase in people sleeping rough in the community. And in the summer in Cobourg, there was a real wake up for folks, with people actually quite visibly on the streets, homeless in the community. And I think those things are related.
So what also about the lack of an emergency shelter? How did that play into the snapshot that was taken?
Yeah, so that snapshot was taken while Transition House was closed, which was the only sort of general purpose emergency shelter in Northumberland. So that was certainly a factor there in probably the chronic homelessness picture that you were asking about was made worse by that particular situation. Folks who would have been housed in Transition House at that time would have also been included. They would have been listed as being homeless. But I think that a number of these factors sort of have increased the intensity of the difficulty that people are experiencing. And so that certainly was difficult at that time.
Was there any other factors that played into that particular snapshot? We've talked about a couple of extraordinary examples, but were there other factors that maybe weren't in the report that you see are playing a significant role in creating homelessness and contributing to the affordable housing crisis?
Yeah, well, we've got a growing population in this area, but we've had very little in the way of rental housing built. Port Hope has had nothing, had actually a net loss of rental units over the last 5-6 years. So those pieces are certainly significant, just the physical structure, the lack of units that are here. But I think if you look a little deeper about what's happening to kind of our social fabric right now, and it's not only here, but certainly we are being impacted by the opioid crisis, and that's having a destructive effect on our communities.
What are you seeing in the street in regard to that?
So deaths. A number of deaths over the last months, and they're often not reported as this is an opioid death. Various kinds of sudden deaths or some other cause of death. There's still a lot of stigma around people who use drugs, which forces a lot of things to go underground, and so you don't respond to a problem that you're not actually acknowledging. We do harm reduction, needle exchange, that sort of thing, and so we're sort of in touch with what's going on, and we're seeing an increase in the use of opioids. We are seeing riskier behavior. People sort of understanding how risky things are, and feeling like it's the only alternative they have at the moment. It's a deep and it's a long story. The beginnings of you know this kind of opioid use have been growing for a time, but it's really hitting fever pitch now. And I think the recent numbers were something like 2,100 deaths due to opioid use in Canada last year, and Northumberland certainly isn't immune to that. And so you put pieces like that in, and the question for us our perspective on this is not why the drug use, but why the pain. What's the trauma that's behind that, and what you see as an affordable housing issue has its roots in the human spirit.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I was looking in the report, and it's very you talk about these ancillary issues that sort of sit around the affordable housing issue that all contribute and are part of the overall picture. And one of the things that was shocking in the report was that in a 6-month period, people who lacked housing made 172 visits to emergency rooms and 58 calls for ambulances, and it talked about 32 hospital visits and 208 interactions with police and 74 other crisis services. So the cost to the local system was calculated out at over $181,000 was spent in a 6-month period, just in 6 months. What, when we hear those numbers, how does that play out in when you start to describe how all these things interact into the affordable housing crisis?
This you say this is a bit shocking, and I'm shocked that it's still shocking to people. But the understanding we've had for some time is the least expensive response to difficult social issues, health issues, etc., is safe, affordable housing, and you can map this out. There have been various studies that have looked at this. That will tell you, if you don't have safe, affordable housing, if people don't have a roof over their head and living in a secure situation, then what's going to increase is emergency services. All of the expensive services are going to increase.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. I mean, when we look at a Canadian context or a provincial context, yes, these numbers float around. But I don't know anywhere where I've seen an actual number for our community. And when you talk about our community and that we as what it's costing us as a community, where it's like $360,000 a year for this, and we have a hospital that's straining under all of its fiscal pressures, you start to see how if you could solve this part of the puzzle, how it would solve other parts of the puzzle. And I wonder, I mean, can you tell me if that number has actually been floated out locally before?
My recollection is that the 2016 survey, they pulled out some numbers like that, and that they were significantly higher than these numbers. So, and it wouldn't surprise me if you took a little broader look at just that factor. So that number that you're quoting is hospital use and ambulance use. So emergency room admissions and so that's not police. That's not a bunch of other things. It is a little harder to calculate a dollar per visit. Sure. in policing. Look at, we're paying for those things. So this is the siloing of our shared mm-hmm. services is the problem here. Mm-hmm. Because as you say, you take $350,000 and say, okay, that could be a dozen people. That's the people using that service the most. That's the people most in distress in our community. And I've got all kinds of stories of them. Those people aren't even well served for $350,000. They don't work well in that system. But you take that $350,000, and what if we applied that to putting a roof over the head of a bunch of people for a year? And what would that look like? And there are studies to show that that works. But the problem is when you turn those kind of government issues into just really simple dollars and cents kinds of things, and you say, oh, we're spending too much on this, we can't afford to spend it here, but we're going to spend it over there. If we don't house people, if we have chronic homelessness, that turns into more police activity, which is a municipal cost, and it turns into more incarceration, which is the most expensive way to accommodate people, and so many people often end up there because that's how the thing tumbles out.
So you've said this already, and it's in the report, it's written out, and it says that this study is not a full or accurate depiction of what the real situation is. And I wonder sometimes if we say to ourselves, well, how can we trust this study? And it becomes an excuse maybe not to address the issue. So how do we trust this stuff if it can't be a full or accurate picture?
Well, I think it's accurate for what it is, the nature of homelessness is sort of makes the process difficult. But I think that looking at this, so for example, if the I'm not sure how the hospital reads this kind of thing, but if the hospital were to look at their costs and services through that lens, that might reveal some more information. There's different ways of collecting a more thorough picture. This is self-reporting by people who identify as being homeless at the moment, and so there's limitations to that. As I said, do you walk up to someone on the street? This is very much working through organizations and having people identify themselves. There are a lot of people who are in that hidden homeless category who really don't want to reveal themselves, or they're uncomfortable giving information for a variety of reasons, so they choose not to participate in something like this. So this is a sort of a snapshot, the best you can do to kind of get a picture. I think those of us that are working on the ground on homelessness and housing issues look at this report, and it rings true for us. So I think that's another piece that we can use. Small scale, smaller communities, it's a little more difficult to do that kind of research and have perfectly accurate statistics. But certainly the trends, the issues that are identified here give us plenty to work on.
And we're going to explore some more of those issues when we come back after our commercial break. I'm here with David Sheffield, the Community Director for the Greenwood Coalition. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn. My guest today is the Community Director for the Greenwood Coalition, David Sheffield. We're talking about affordable housing in Northumberland. I wanted to start off by talking a bit about the emergency shelter, Transition House. It reopened in October. I know that there were some concerns when it was first announced that you were a bit worried about the process and how it had been selected. Now that it's been operating for several months, what's your assessment of the situation now?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing with the Transition House was a real turnaround in the approach to providing emergency housing. And my sense is that philosophically, they've moved ahead by quite a bit. Essentially the board has sort of gone back and created a new approach, a new set of protocols, complete new staff and management there, and they as you said, reopened in October and it started slowly so that they weren't overwhelmed with a lot of people at once, and have sort of grown into that, and so we're certainly what we're hearing from folks is it's a very different place, and they're accommodating a much wider range of individuals. It's not easy work, certainly, and it's not easy work to do on a modest budget, and so all of those things make it a daily challenge for them. But the sort of collaboration and back and forth that the new staff have with the other folks, where the county leads the homelessness coordinated response team, so I'm part of that, and Salvation Army and Cornerstone Transition House, that sort of thing, and so we have some good dialogue there, and we're able to respond, and so I see Transition House being responsive, and I'm certainly encouraged by the new direction there.
Are they meeting the demand that there is in the community?
I would say no. I think that we have growing challenges here, and their capacity to meet that is not what is required in the community, and. That may be something that we have to live with for a while. You can't turn these things around on a dime, and the police station situation in Coburg, the Coburg police renovated their lobby into a warming room, which really took up the slack while Transition House was closed. My understanding is that it's continuing to be used by people who, for whatever reason, aren't fitting at Transition House. So that's one piece of it. The women's shelters are running at capacity, so I think that we've hit capacity fairly quickly after Transition House reopening, and going forward, we're going to have more of these challenges. Again, if we're not providing affordable housing for people, and we're displacing 50 people, as we were saying happened during the Wellington Street fire, we're going to be over capacity. And when people don't have anywhere to go, that's when other challenges happen. It really becomes very difficult. People are living in crisis constantly, and folks that are being sheltered, temporarily in Transition House or Cornerstone, if they don't have somewhere to move from there, that creates a difficult environment when there isn't a flow through. This isn't a healthy overall community response yet, and so we really need more affordable housing built in a variety of shapes and sizes to meet that need.
So what you're talking about is the spectrum of affordable housing, that we have these crises services like Transition House and the police station, but then there has to be transitional housing that gets them out of wherever the emergency is into something more stable. And then there's even the things that Habitat for Humanity does that creates affordable permanent housing.
There's a spectrum of housing, and to have a healthy, well-housed community, you need to have space available at each stage along that continuum.
Yeah, and of course, as we get people coming in and housing prices go up, that then disrupts that spectrum from providing a wide range. So it's great that you can sell your house now for maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 times, 10 times what you paid for it, but now all of a sudden other people can't get into the community.
Yeah, exactly. Really quickly the economy becomes skewed, and folks that don't own a $400,000 house are struggling at the other end, and so I'm working right now with the county on the affordable housing strategy that will come out later, with kind of their what they feel that the county and various municipalities can do to affect that, and working through that, we're seeing where some of those gaps are. What are the pieces that need to happen to change that? And the low income section is the section that that requires the most development of that continuum. And so low income is considered $48,000 a year household income and below. And so when we're looking at that, that's a pretty big gap, because people on social assistance are making less than $10,000 a year. And so to make that work to house people who are on a permanent disability pension requires a lot more affordable housing at that lower end.
One of the things that got mused about quite some time ago, but it was actually out in the public realm, was the Port Hope Police Service was looking at doing something similar to what Coburg was doing. Do you hear about that or any other plans for...
I don't know of any current plans to provide a warming room. It's been discussed a few times, and I know there's a bit of a will to do something. It fits with my view of what a community should look like. A community the size of Port Hope should have somewhere to go if there's nowhere else to go. Some kind of emergency, get out of the cold spot. And one of the challenges in smaller communities is justifying the existence of that in terms of staffing it, keeping it open, et cetera. But there are a lot of creative responses that have happened in communities, and the and Coburg Police being in the downtown location, having the opportunity to renovate their building and having the vision to do that, are being seen as a bit visionary. I know that people are coming from other communities to look at that, because it's a cost-effective emergency response that can save lives. There are people sleeping outdoors in this weather. I just helped a man this week that's been hasn't been indoors this year.
In the shadow of the municipal election, there was a lot of promises made to address affordable housing. It became sort of a buzzword for candidates. Is there any sign that you have, or is giving you the idea that these politicians are going to follow through?
Well, buzz is always a nice sign to start with, and there's buzz, you're right. I think my gut feeling is that some of these folks that have been elected to, I'm most familiar with Coburg and Port Hope councils, that some folks are definitely on board and are sincere in intending to see affordable housing built in their communities in the in the next term of office. I think the challenges that they face now, having agreed in principle to see affordable housing built, is to making the commitment. They'll be presenting their budgets soon. Will there be anything in those budgets that indicate they're serious about housing? Is there any allocation of staff time to move on this? In what way are they going to provide leadership to this issue? And I really think that's a key role for municipal governments right now, to look around at their community and say, we can do better as a community, and so I as a councillor, I'm going to lead on this. And I think what's sort of, as we see the intention to respond to a need like this, we see the negative side of it as well. And there's a lot of attention to reducing taxes, a lot of scrutiny, and so any sort of shift in in that direction is met with a negative, you know, I'm paying too much for taxes, you need to lower my taxes, as well as the what we saw in Coburg with a not in my backyard sort of movement, and that I think is ready to respond. And we as a community, we need to be proactive, recognize that we have neighbors that are sleeping outdoors, we have neighbors that are inadequately housed, we have people living in crisis in our community because they don't have a place to live, and we need to make it shameful for people to come to our door and hand out pamphlets that say we don't want rentals built on our street, we don't want rentals built in our town, because that's been happening, and we need to see that as a negative social behavior, and that we need to be creative about how we as a community can house all of our neighbors.
We saw this as a case study just recently with the old hospital. Mayor Bob Sanderson from Port Hope was in here, and he talked about the idea of turning the old hospital into affordable housing. And we saw through social media quite the backlash. So is that the kind of thing that you're talking about? And how would you respond to something like that?
Yeah. This is difficult. I mean, you're quite familiar with the climate that we're in right now in various places. And, you know, people are quick to blame Donald Trump and the alt-right. But I think there's a filter down kind of effect of that in our communities. And I think that really needs to be sorted out at the municipal level. This is where we're face to face. This is where we're walking past people. This is not something that happens at a distance. And I think that it's time for people who care about their neighbors to step up and have their voice heard, because it seems to be quite acceptable to out of fear, anger, whatever it is, to respond and to talk about, you know, a dollar amount or it seems to be acceptable these days to shame people in public because of their circumstances, blame my misfortune on somebody else make sort of logical jumps. But I think the response right now is for the moral leadership in communities to step up and say, we have a challenge. We have a human challenge here. We have people who can't be housed, people who are living in extreme poverty, and the what the provincial government has done in Ontario so far is essentially slam those people, the most vulnerable people in our community. When I look at 6 months of what this government has done, they've basically taken aim at the poor people and hurt them and set up things that are going to continue hurting poor people. And if we don't, if there isn't the moral leadership to see people as having value in the community and say this person deserves a roof over their head, then we're going to be in some pretty rough shape, and the power is going to go to a few people, and more people are going to be left out.
Is it significant that the lower tier municipalities seem to be engaging more in this issue and not leaving it to the county? We saw a big shift downwards. And, you know, when you're talking about, as you have, about compassion and connectivity to this lower tier, I'm wondering if you see a greater significance in that this was really a county responsibility. They seem to take the lead on it. Now it seems like local mayors, local lower tier politicians are actively wanting to make this a priority in their strategic plans.
Yeah, I think that's a really significant piece, and it really sounds different at this point than it did 4 years ago. And so I'm encouraged by that. In a two-tiered system like we have in Northumberland County, the county council, is made up of the mayors of those municipalities, and I understand that it's a challenge to lead a municipality and then be part of the county council and lead there as well. But I'm seeing a shift there where the mayors of some of the municipalities are saying, I'm willing to dig into these issues to understand what this looks like in my community. And I think that with the affordable housing strategy that the county is producing, that will be an asset for each of the municipalities, because there will be a county strategy, but there will also be individual municipality strategies that come from that. And so Port Hope will be able to say, here's what we need to do, here's what we're able to do about this. And I think that now that's starting to turn around, I'm encouraged that's where it's got to come from. The people closest to the ground, closest to the issues, need to be creative and responding to that.
But doesn't it get a little frustrating sometimes? I mean, the county seems to be very good at producing reports, and I know that that's a big part of their function, is to give the overarching framework for the lower tiers to work within. And, you know, bless them for doing that. But at the same time, we spend a lot of time. I mean, I talked to somebody 7-8 months ago about this very strategy from the county. And they were, you know, going to go out and have these consultations and do that. And that's very time consuming. In the meantime, you know, as you were saying earlier, we can go downtown now in Coburg. And it's become very obvious that there are people that are sleeping on benches. And I know that a lot of people found that very disturbing when it first came out, and then all of a sudden it kind of disappeared again. And, you know, maybe we can all go back to bed and sleep a little bit better, but that hasn't solved the problem. When are we going to start seeing spades in the ground and actual things being built that are actually going to start to solve this? And don't you get a sense of the urgency of that?
Yeah, I agree. And I get frustrated about how slow things are. And this is where I come back to moral leadership, that we need to see that. We need to see those governing bodies act on these things. But I also think that it comes back to the community will. If the community has a will to house people, if the community is concerned, they'll put some pressure on and expect more results from our governing bodies. And so I think that's important. And I know the whole issue of local journalism is important to you. And I think this is where we're seeing some of that play out. We're not challenging our local governments well enough with our media.
Do you wonder if sometimes, though, with the provincial direction that you talked about earlier, where, you know, the bottom's sort of being knocked off the lower end of our community in order to have the proper tools to survive, proper minimum wage, maybe even a basic income, the services that they need, all these things have been taken back due to budgetary cuts. So if that's the one message you're getting on one side as a community, and on the other side, we're sitting here talking about the urgency and the critical nature of affordable housing, is it too easy for somebody just to go, well, you know, everything's fine, you know, just the province is handling it, you know, they know where the priorities are, let's get them jobs, and they'll be fine, get them a job. That's all they need. Once they get a job, then everything will be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. That whole line about the best social program is a job just shows a level of ignorance about what kinds of challenges people are really facing in communities, and what the employment market looks like, and how we've created an economy that shuts out a whole sector of the community. I think what's happened with the provincial government has put a real chill on the agencies and lower level governments that are seeking to improve the situation for people living in poverty, and there's a feeling right now that we're going to have more work to do just to support people, just to help people survive, just to get through. And so that creative, proactive, finding better solutions, all of that gets downgraded when when the provincial government is creating a situation that's worse for the people that we're working with, that we're supporting. So we're putting more resources now into meeting those needs, and the momentum that was being gathered toward getting some things built, being more creative, has some wind taken out of its sails, and that's unfortunate, and that may turn around. I should say that there are a number of things that aren't really public information at this point, but developers, folks working in the affordable housing realm, that are essentially projects that could turn into some housing, and if a few pieces come together, if things are lined up to access some of the federal government's affordable housing money, if all those pieces come together, we may see some a number of projects built in the community there. So it's not that it sort of looks like nothing is happening, but there are a lot of pieces happening. There are offers in on properties. There are discussions. There's a tiny homes think group that's working on a project. There are a number of pieces, we're not at a place where those things are bursting out yet. Would have been nice to be at this point 2 years ago, or more.
It's good to end on a positive note. I guess what I'd like to finish with, though, is the people that are listening. What can they do to help? What would you suggest to them?
Well, that's a great question. I think a certain amount of it comes back to that community will, think about what kind of a community do you want to live in? Do you want to live in a community that welcomes everyone, that makes space for everyone, that feels that everyone has value, that people who have grown up and lived in this community their whole life and are now living on the streets deserve something better than that, and that we can do better, then this is a great time to step up and speak up, send a letter to your local municipality, talk to those representatives, tell them that you support what they're doing, and think about that rather than not in my backyard, the yes in my backyard. What can we do to say that that folks are welcome here, that we want to see more affordable housing, more rental built in our community, so that we can all live in a safe, healthy place, good place to be. Support the organizations that are doing it too.
Thanks so much, David, for this great, insightful conversation.
It's a pleasure.
I'm so grateful on behalf of myself and our listeners that you took the time out to come here today. So thank you so much. I'm working very hard right at the moment to get some exciting guests for our show next week, so watch my Facebook page to see who will be coming on. If you have any comments or questions, rants or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. I will read out a selection of the comments on next week's show. If you'd like to listen to this or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca, where you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this, Northumberland.